Welcome to the Junior MBA Coaches Corner with your host, Jay Billis. Today, Jay welcomes Chicago Bulls assistant coach, Karen Stack Umlau, head coach, North Carolina Central University, Lavelle Moten, and director of coach development of the U.S. Basketball Youth Division, Don Showalter. And now, here's your host, Jay Billis.
I'd like to welcome you into the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Today, our topic is culture, a word and term that you hear all the time in basketball. It seems anytime someone gets a new job, they've got to change the culture. So you have to have a culture established first. And we've got three, I call them in the best way possible, basketball lifers and tremendous basketball minds. We've got Karen Stack Umlau, an assistant coach with the Chicago Bulls, Lavelle Moten, the head coach of North Carolina Central University, and Don Showalter, the director of coach development for USA Basketball, and want to give you a little bit of the background on each one of our terrific panelists. And first, let's start with Karen Stack Umlau, who started her playing career in college at Northwestern, where she was an outstanding player. She went on and played professional basketball overseas before she came back and started working for the Chicago Bulls organization. And I know there are people that have had incredibly varied experiences in professional basketball that can claim to have done everything in an organization. But I can't think of anyone who's done more than Karen has done in this game. She started out in the ticket office, then moved into the front office. She was a general manager for Chicago's WNBA franchise and the director of basketball operations for the Chicago Bulls, and now an assistant coach for the Bulls, the first female assistant coach in Chicago Bulls history. And also Lavelle Moten, who is now the head coach at North Carolina Central University. He was a great player at North Carolina Central, where he left as the third all-time leading scorer. And he played professional basketball overseas as well. And in 2009, he was named the head coach at his alma mater. And since then, he's won three MEAC titles in the regular season and four MEAC tournament titles, and has established not just a winning culture at NC Central, but a championship culture. And last but certainly not least is a good friend, Don Showalter, who has been a great coach at the high school level for over 40 years, has won more championships than you can count, more Coach of the Year awards than you can count, both regionally and nationally, and has also coached USA Basketball in the U16 and U17. I believe he's 62-0 in those games and has won multiple world championships. One of the most respected coaches and teachers in the game at any level. We're really, really pleased to have all of you here today. Thank you for being here. And want to start out in talking about culture. I'm gonna give you the dictionary definition of culture, which is a way of life for a group of people, behaviors, beliefs, values, symbols that they accept and that are passed along from one generation to the next. And I mentioned we hear culture a lot in our game. And I want to ask each one of you, and we'll start with Karen. Karen, what, in your experience, both as a player and front office, and now as an assistant coach in addition to front office duties, what does culture mean to you in your franchise?
Well, I think one of the big things that I always fall back on is it's like bulls across your chest, you know, making that symbol proud. And I think in the wake of The Last Dance, our players and around the NBA, I think everyone has a new meaning of that and how, like what the history of our franchise was. So, you know, in building the new culture, obviously, you know, it is more what we value, the attitudes, beliefs of the team. It's, you know, kind of, I think there's a lot of thought that goes into it with the coaching staff first to see, you know, how should we frame the culture for our team to have a winning culture. I mean, that's obviously the most important thing, but how do you frame things on a daily basis, you know, that we all have a say so in it, but we bring diverse voices to that. Okay. And so it's a process. You're identifying your team's strengths, but I think it's, you know, having a vision of how they're going to come together, what their daily practice habits are going to be, building the relationships first with those players so you trust and communicate well with each other, and just getting to know what makes everybody tick so you can get the best out of everyone.
So, Lavelle, how do you see it from a college perspective and having to establish a program's culture?
Well, it was really difficult for me for several reasons when I tried to establish, you know, my culture. And it's crazy that you hear this word so very often now. You know, we were in the middle of a transition from Division II to Division I. So we were independent for a year. And first thing I did, I went to the SID and I said, look, what's the margin of error of our losses? Or just with the guarantee games. And we were losing by 39.7 points a game. Right. So not only was I a basketball coach, I had to become a psychologist. Like it was just crazy. And so when I sat down with the committee upon, you know, me being hired, they never really asked me any basketball questions. So they wanted to know, how would I run this program? And I said, listen, it's very simple. I'm going to run this program the same way my grandmother ran her household. And with that, I tried to simplify everything, and I just simply define culture as habits. You don't need to buy a 400-page book and read about the great ones in the culture that they established. Culture is just your habits, and I think Karen kind of touched on it. What you do every single day, what you emphasize, what you allow, your non-negotiables, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think, obviously, that definition varies depending upon who you ask, but I just think you have to stay convicted in your beliefs and not have any negotiables. And that's what we've done at North Carolina Central. We're going to demand that you get we got to get excellence from you every single day. And oftentimes kids don't feel like bringing it every day. Hell, I don't feel like bringing it every single day, but we have to demand excellence and greatness from each other every single day. We hold each other accountable every single day. We play for the name on the front of this chest, because as long as you're playing for something that's greater than yourself, great things happen, and I'm a firm believer of that. And the last thing was just, we focused on sacrifice and passion. And if you broke that word passion down, I think is real interesting. It's pass I on. So we constantly tell our guys, how do you pass yourself on? Are you going to have a positive or negative effect on that person next to you? So those are some of the things that we contribute to our culture.
Don, how about you in establishing a high school program and dealing with younger players than Karen or LaBelle? How did you establish your culture, and what was important to you?
Well, it's interesting because I don't even think I even remember talking about culture until about 10 or 15 years ago. And now all of a sudden we're all talking about culture. I think that culture to me is basically how you do things. How you do things every day on the court, how you do things off the court, how your team does things on and off the court. And I think for a long time as a high school coach, I mixed up chemistry and culture, and they're not the same thing. You know, chemistry is more how kids relate to each other. And then culture, I think, is how they behave together for a common good. So I think coaches get those two things mixed up a little bit with what they're doing. And I'll just go on to say that I learned a lot about developing culture from probably the best, Coach K, when he started to take over with the senior men's team for USA Basketball, and learned that the standards that was set, culture is not dependent on rules, it's dependent on standards and how you approach those standards every day.
That's an interesting point. First, about the difference between culture and chemistry, I'd not heard the distinction made before. That's really, really good. But your point about standards versus rules, one, Don, what's the difference? And when you were a high school coach with younger players, I mean, I assume you've got to have some rules. So you say, hey, here's things we don't do. What's the difference between a standard and a rule to you?
Well, to kids, I think, and I think this goes all the way up through with our elite players, with our junior national teams as well. I think rules sometimes have a negative connotation to it. I think standards have more of a positive connotation. So, for instance, instead of mentioning that, hey, we have rules as far as being on time, our standard is for that is respect. If we're going to respect our coaches, we're going to respect our fellow teammates, the respect part comes in, you're on time. And if that doesn't happen, then you're not living up to our standard as opposed to breaking a rule.
LaBelle, how do you view the rules versus standards thing? Do you guys have do you make a distinction one, and what sort of examples do you have of rules and standards in your program?
No, that's it's funny that you mentioned that, because I wasn't grandfathered in. So I had a unique situation. I didn't sit on the bench beside a legend and then become an assistant and now I have something to gauge from. Like, I just had to find it from the grassroots level on my own. And I started as a middle school and a high school coach. But to answer your question, when I first got to college, I had like a page full of rules. And, you know, I started going to NFL training camps, and I developed a relationship with Mike Tomlin. And I saw him run his staff meeting up there. And I was like, it was the most remarkable thing ever. And what I discovered is he don't have a whole lot of rules because he don't want to enforce a whole lot of rules. Now he's dealing with grown men. So what I came back and implemented was I met with my captains and I said, listen here, you guys been in the program 3 or 4 years. You know how we do things. You take this sheet of paper, you go over there to that locker room, and you guys come up with quote unquote standards on this North Carolina Central basketball program. And whatever you guys come up with, I'm going to hold you accountable to that every single day. And it'll be basically you allowing someone to have input. And I just think you get more buy-in whenever you allow them to buy in instead of establishing some rules where they feel like it's a hierarchy and a dictatorship and they got to, you know, surface under the guidelines of those. So I just allow them to have input, and we develop those standards, and we type them up and hang them on a post in the locker room. And I say, listen, we holding you to this. You said you was going to do this. You said we were never going to be late to practice. And so I just think that's the difference with us.
You know, Karen, you started with the Chicago Bulls, I believe, in Michael Jordan's rookie year back in 1985. And I'm not sure if people looked at sort of the Bulls front office back then, they'd see anything resembling what it is today. How did you, with the Bulls, build that winning and championship culture back then?
You know, Jerry Krause came in. He had experience in baseball with the front office, and he immediately knew it was about scouting and evaluating talent. So, I mean, he was hired just a couple months after me, and I was working in tickets, as you mentioned. So it's like, you know, let's build this basketball operations department and have it work closely with the coaches, you know? So I think he was a pioneer in that sense. And that's where we were kind of on the ground level. And mind you, this is a time when computers were just coming on, right? Like when I first started, they were just, we get like the telex machine from the league office with the stats, you know? So it's really, you know, and I was typing on a typewriter. So the way things have come about, you know, it's just, it's kind of cool to have seen that whole process and how so much has changed in those 30 to 35 years. It just, how much, you know, the future and how we can get everything we want, like right at our fingertips now, when you had to work for it before.
Karen, is there a difference between staff culture, front office culture, and team culture, or do you want it to be seamless and very much the same?
Well, I know we're all touching on it, and I love some of the points you're making about positivity. I think there has to be a really strong connection, and you're going to identify and draft and trade for players that you feel fit your profile. You know, we want a hard playing defensive-minded team, and we want the care level to be really high. So, you know, but we also we realize how much it is player-driven. To your guys' point, Lavelle, you know, we could say to some, like when Jim Boylan took over, it was like, you know what, we really need to get these guys in the building earlier, so they can really get a good. We put out a beautiful breakfast buffet, have them eat and bond together. And, you know, so we had a little rule, you could call it a rule, but you need to be in here 45 minutes before any call on the court. Okay. So if we're having a 10:45 practice, no later than 10, but you have to, you know, get your stuff done. And it might've been a rule at the beginning, but the players took ownership, and then they were there much earlier than that too, because they knew they wanted to eat, they wanted to get their treatment. But it is important for the players, you know, you have to really identify what they value, and on the staff, what we value, and find that common ground.
Boy, that's interesting too, about the time spent. You want them together in areas that aren't necessarily on the floor. And Lavelle, how important are bonding activities that you would consider outside of your on-floor practices or workouts?
You know, when I first got the job, I think we it's human nature to coach how you were coached, teach how you were taught, parent how you were parented. And, you know, when I played in the 90s and when I was in college, when we came out of practice, I went one way and my coach went the other, and I ain't want to see him again until practice the next day. He ain't want to see me. But nowadays, it's these kids are so reliant, you know, upon, and they have to feel and touch and talk and all of that. They have to have that interaction. And so when I walk to my office, a lot of times they're in my office already watching TV. Or the locker room now, it has to be a lounge set up. They don't even go back to their rooms. They just don't like spending time alone. And so one thing that I changed, and I thought as a leader, you must adapt. And I was stubborn, you know, initially, that I started having them at my house a little more. And I wanted them to see me as a man, how I interact with my children. And the thing that I demand from them, I demand from my 7 and 11 year olds also. And I think it helped open them up to say, wow, coach, you know how we looked at teachers when we were in elementary school, like, we just thought after they taught us, they just went to a spaceship somewhere and came back the next day. Like, we never saw our teachers. And so that's how they, in a sense, they kind of view coaches as that. And I just wanted them to see me as a man and kind of expose my vulnerabilities to them as well. So I think it's valuable. I think it builds chemistry. I think it builds character. And it makes us all respect each other along the lines.
You know, Don, with USA Basketball, with the teams that you've coached, you don't have a ton of time to establish a culture. I know there's one with the program that they're walking into, but how do you establish that culture within your team that may be already within your program when you don't have a lot of time? And maybe this is for AAU coaches or people that are coaching more of an all-star team where you've got a shorter period of time where you have to establish something.
Yeah, that's probably our toughest, that's probably our most difficult job with establishing a culture, because we just don't have a lot of time with them. We do have some mini camps now that we bring kids in earlier throughout the year, which helps us. But I really think that the number one thing we try to develop right away is trust. And if they come in with trusting the coaching staff and having a trust in what we're going to do, basically all kids, I think all players want to get better. And if they trust you that we're going to make them better, then that's a lot of the buy-in to it. And part of our, part of our culture is based on the fact that we need to have trust between coaches and players, but also between players and players as well. So we do that through a lot of communication, different type of things, off the court stuff, you know, where we meet and have different speakers come in, much like Coach K developed his senior men's team with a lot of that stuff.
Karen, you work in an industry that is undeniably a business. It's a multi-billion dollar business. Still, you know, standards and culture is important. How important is your culture when you're trying to identify a player you're going to trade for? And when, you know, how do you identify, you know, maybe some risk when you're saying, okay, this player may be a risk, but a risk worth taking, and our culture can withstand it, even if it doesn't work out with this player?
I do know that they do so much background work, as I'm sure Lavelle does at the college level and everything. You know, you hopefully get to know, or maybe one of our assistant coaches or our executives have actually been on a team with that player. But I think, Chicago is a really great destination. We just have to, through winning, you know, make it attractive again, you know. And I know that is our tourist's goal coming in. Mark Eversley, our new GM, and our whole staff we're really excited and on board to try to, compete in free agency and really get, you know, and identify a couple pieces that will make us next level.
Is that really difficult? I mean, you've been there through all of it, through the six championships and then some rebuilding years. You know, how has it been for you to keep the culture number one when maybe the results haven't been as good as you'd like, and maybe it's harder for the players to buy into that?
Well, you always have your fundamentals that you know, your values. You have a care factor, try to do things the right way. And, you know, a lot of times you want to say, okay, we want this kind of culture, but you have to see how the team just molds together and what their identity becomes. You know, we had a culture this year, I think, that created a team that played really hard every night. We saw that, right? We had 38 crunch time games of the 65, and it was like, that means, you know, 6 minutes left, plus five, minus five. The opposing coaches would say, your team played so hard. Like, they would give us that feedback. And so, you know, that's this particular team. Now, we had more veteran teams, you know, with Dwayne Wade, Rajon Rondo, Jimmy Butler. You hoped all that meshes together, and there's so many factors, right? And it's hard to say why you want to have a common denominator culture, but yet with all the different players, it's not always the same, if that makes sense.
That's a great point. That's a great point. LaBelle, I think you mentioned the term non-negotiables a little bit earlier. What are some of the non-negotiables for you at NC Central?
Selfishness, right? And I don't mean that in the worst way. A lot of times, you know, people forget that this is a team sport. So a lot of times I get a knock on my door, coach, can I talk to you? And the first question we always ask, is this about you or is it about the team? Right. And so we always have to check ourselves. So, you know, just selfishness is the first and foremost. And just a sense of sacrifice. Like, what are you willing to sacrifice? You have to be out here for the betterment of the person next to you. And when I initially took over the program, that was really difficult because I knew where we had to go. I knew we had limited time and probably limited resources to get there. And so it was kind of the phrase, I think it was Bo Schembechler said, I had to get rid of some people, but I had to get, you know, I think Bo Schembechler said, those who remain will be champions or something like that. So that's what it was. So you have to stay common ground. And the other thing is just the respect. And I just think when you emphasize the respect level and they understand that they're in it for something greater than themselves, I think the results come.
You know, Don, there are times when we can look around the game, not necessarily inside a program, but around it, where people would say, hey, the AAU culture can be toxic. Sometimes dealing with parents and expectations and social media can be toxic. How do you keep toxic cultures outside of your program from getting into your program, if that makes sense?
Sure does. And I think you deal with that every day. I mean, culture is something you fight for every day. It's not just a one time at the beginning of the year, you have your standards and then you let it go because you have to fight for your culture every day. And I think it takes a daily presence by the coach and players to enforce that culture. But the culture that you present gives the players a lot of confidence, and it starts with communication. You know, how you communicate with players and parents and everybody in your program is extremely important. And as a young coach, I probably didn't do a very good job of that. And as I got more experience, I over-communicated because you don't over-communicate. With parents especially, and people around in your program. I think communication is the number one culture thing that you need. It used to be where, well, we're not going to deal with parents, we're not going to talk to parents at our level, but I think now we have to deal with parents. In fact, start of the year, I make in-person home visits with all our players just to give them an idea of what our program is like and kind of build that trust between us and parents. And I think when parents understand that we really are for their son or daughter, it makes a huge difference. And I'll go one step further in saying that the communication you give is like a kind of like a lightning rod. Some of it can be, you know, it goes on and it really builds that throughout the family and the parents. I think it gives them a good idea of who you are as a coach and what you stand for. And so I think communication is off the charts that way.
LaBelle, back when you and I played, I don't think our coaches worried too much about parents or had to communicate that much once we, you know, came to college. But now things are different. Parents are more involved, and I don't mean that necessarily as a bad thing, but they're more involved. Yeah. What do you say to parents of your players once they've stepped on campus?
Well, the main thing is I tell them, look, you can talk to me about anything. Your kids' academics, your kids' social life, but two things we don't have conversations with parents about, and it's part of our culture, it's our non-negotiables. We don't talk about playing time, and we don't talk about other kids. And so once you nip that in the bud, you know, you kind of eliminate conversations with parents. Jay, it's something really weird. And I asked my team this one day, and it just baffled me. And Don and Karen, you guys might can touch on it too. I said, how many of you guys tried out for your high school team? Like try it out. I don't mean I'm already on the team. I mean, coach going to post this list at 7:30. And my heart is going to be broken if I'm not one of the 12 on there. And only one guy raised his hand on my team. Because he tried out. And what happens is you get a sense of entitlement. You know, you haven't worked and appreciated what you need to appreciate being part of a team. So, like, we're seeing a culture shift, obviously, once again. But those are the things I try to tell my team. Look, we don't talk to parents about basketball and other kids. Like, social life, academically, welfare being, all that type stuff, I'll talk to you for 24 hours. But basketball and playing time and other kids, we're not talking about that. Because if you open up Pandora's box, now you got 14 assistant coaches.
I was just going to say a comment on that. Great comments. But one thing that's helped me out as a coach is when a parent talks to me, we're talking about two different individuals. Because they're talking about their son or daughter, you know, as they're, that's the only person they really care about on the team, basically. Right. And we're talking about them as a member of our team. So really there's two different people that we're talking about when parents contact us.
Yeah, I agree.
Boy, that's a great point. let me shift gears just for a moment. And LaBelle, I'd like to start with you on this. We are in a moment now of cultural change that is far beyond the basketball floor. And players, their social activism is at a greater level than we've seen in a long time. I don't want to say ever, but in a long, long time. How as a coach do you deal with that and help? Because I can tell you, I mean, I'm sure you know far better than I. Years ago, there were coaches control where a coach might say, hey, this is a distraction, or anything we do, we need to do together that had maybe a discouraging aspect to it. How do you encourage players to use their voices for cultural change and empower them?
You know, it's something we talk about every day. You know, my main thing was, you know, I'm not only concerned about your 2 hours on the floor that you spend with me, it's really the 22 hours off the floor. You know, I'm not like some Power Five schools where I got guys that's going to go make $180 million to play this game and then never have to work again. So eventually they're going to be respondents of this real world, and the totality of teaching them the manhood principles to be successful is a part of that. And they're going to be future leaders, coaches, husbands, head of households. And part of being a man is, you know, standing firm in your beliefs, and what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong. And I just think I always encourage our guys to speak up and stand up for what's right. Whatever they feel in their heart is right. Whether it's right, wrong, indifferent, we'll talk about it. I don't allow them to hop on bandwagons of trending topics. You know, with the Kaepernick situation a couple of years ago, you know, we had an honest conversation. And they said, Coach, we're feeling like disrespected. We want to kneel. And I said, okay, you can kneel. And I have no problem with that, and we'll support you. But I said, who was John Carlos and who was Tommy Smith? I said, because this is deeper than the Cap incident. So if you're going to become, you know, research and do your history on this and you feel passionate about it, I support you wholeheartedly. But I just don't want you jumping on a trending topic, because now when you get off your knee and somebody asks you a question, you're going to have to be able to elaborate on why you did what you did. So we have that. But to say the least, I just think it's extremely important now more than ever. I think they're understanding and utilizing their voices, you know, everything from the NCAA, whether it's, you know, being paid, you know, for their services and just being treated fairly. You know, I'm always going to support and be pro athlete because I've always been on that side of it.
Karen, you've personified cultural change in your ascendance in the game. And it seems odd that in this day and age, we're talking about, you know, having women in the NBA as being this big change over the years with, you know, you and Nancy Lieberman and Becky Hammon as assistants and assistant coaches on the bench. And I have to tell you, I've heard you interviewed a number of times, and you're often asked the question of young women seeing you, young girls, how empowering that is. But one of the things that I've felt is lost in that is how powerful it is for young men and boys to see you and what you do. And first of all, I'm such an admirer of you and Becky Hammond and Nancy, who I've known forever. How do you see this sort of your ascendance and the job that you're doing as being impactful culturally, just even beyond basketball?
Well, so many things there. When I went to John Paxson, and it just was something in my heart after Jerry Krause's memorial service, where I was like, you know, what's my legacy going to be? And since second, third grade, I watched basketball and participated in basketball as much as I could every day of my life. So I felt like I was getting further away from it. And to be given the opportunity, I was given by John and then Fred Hoiberg, and now Jim Boylan has totally become my mentor. And as you know, he's, as you probably saw on your podcast, there's so much stuff that I learn every day. My head wants to explode, you know, because you think you know something moving to this level and being around it, but until you're on the inside and see the preparation and what is involved in the NBA coaching lifestyle, it's pretty incredible. And I love it every day. It never feels like a job, but you know, culturally for me, like, I think one of the best things is I can be like a mother figure and maybe a little bit of a different voice for our players. They love their mom, their sisters, and there's a little different feel maybe talking with me versus speaking with one of the other coaches. You know, it's just good to have, we also have Dr. Wendy Balaby, who's amazing. She's worked with Olympic athletes and she's our performance coach, and you know, just so good at what she does. So she's another person they can speak with. And I think I have that little sixth sense about something that's going on with a player, much like maybe a mom does to their child. Like you see things, and I'm like, I got to go talk to, I can just see by the body language that they're feeling either left out or something's going on. So hopefully, you know, that's part of it where I think, like you're talking about, doesn't matter male, female, like you have a connection for different reasons, just based on who you are.
Well, another thing I've admired about you is you're continuing quest to learn more about the game, and one of the great resources I know that you have been behind is eCoach, and eCoach is a fantastic resource for coaches really at any level, and so many great NBA coaches have given their time and their knowledge on eCoach for the benefit of the game. And I know you've chosen a drill, a closeout drill that Lloyd Pierce uses. And want you to talk a little bit about that and talk about eCoach and how much it means to you.
Well, and I can't wait to dive into some of the material there. Honestly, I've been using the quarantine time to catch up a lot on just drawing up our own plays, video work and everything. But it was funny when I watched Lloyd's shift to closeout drill, it's exactly what Coach Boylan teaches, just with some different words, right? So we talk about that every day. It's like just a great place to start defensively, right? You know, how are you playing on the ball? We're in a no middle stance. You know, we're as soon as the ball leaves the cell of the finger, you are shifting to your gap by taking, you know, one step off the line of the ball and a couple steps to the midpoint. Perfect. So you're in the middle. Perfect. And you should never be turning your head. Perfect. So, I mean, there's so many things with that, but it's just being in the stance. And I loved Coach Pierce just saying, use your length and stay in your stance. And just always, you know, you have to react as the ball is moving, not after the fact. I think that's just such a big part of it. And having disciplined footwork so you stay on balance and you can close out properly.
Well, Lloyd Pierce of the Atlanta Hawks, he's such an outstanding coach. And Don Showalter and I both had the opportunity to work with him at the Nike Skills Academies. And not a better guy, not a better coach out there. But before we finish up, I'd like to ask a question that is a little bit outside the realm of what we've been discussing all show long. And because we're dealing with the, have been dealing with the quarantine for so long, give me one thing that you've watched on television, Netflix, whatever it is, that you never would have watched absent this amount of time. Lavelle, we'll start with you.
Man, it's been so much on Netflix. I watched Captain, I'm not a Marvel guy. Like, I don't like none of that stuff. I watched Captain America last night? I watched that last night with my kids, and it was actually pretty good. But I've never been the Marvel guy, the superhero guy, and I actually watched it with them, and probably on television. I found myself literally watching a cornhole championship, right? And I was like, what am I watching? Like, and it weighed on me so heavily immediately after I went on Amazon and ordered like two cornhole things. So I've been playing it ever since. So it's pretty cool.
Don, how about you?
Yeah, my wife and I actually, we really enjoyed it. We watched this whole series of The Crown, which is about Queen Elizabeth. So that's something I would have never done before. But we have the time to do it, so it was very interesting.
Karen, anything for you?
Well, you know, I had watched Breaking Bad. I hated it at first, and then I stayed with it. So, I mean, I couldn't believe I was watching Better Call Saul with my husband. I'm like, why are we watching this? Like, you know, once you watch one episode, you've seen them all of that. But, you know, one interesting thing, we were watching the History Channel, and I just, the whole thing on Ulysses S. Grant and learning some history with my daughter, I was like, when do you ever get to sit and watch that? Never. I'm always trying to just watch basketball. So.
Me too, but I got hooked on Yellowstone recently, and it's pretty darn good.
Yeah. Kevin Costner, yeah, I heard that's
and all that
good.
Stuff,
yeah.
Paramount. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah. I'd recommend it. But listen, thank you all of you for being with us on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner, and it was really a pleasure to listen to you. And thanks for sharing everything you know.
Thank you, Pat.
Hey, appreciate it.
For more coaching resources, including our curriculum, please visit juniornba.com. I want to thank our friends at the NBA Coaches Association and eCoach for providing instructional content from their eCoach basketball video library to give our viewers an insider's perspective about how NBA coaches teach the topic we're focusing upon each week. For more information and to access the coaches video library, go to eCoachBasketball.com.
Next week on the Junior NBA Coaches Corner, Jay welcomes Los Angeles Clippers assistant coach Rex Kalamian and top NBA and WNBA skills trainer Alex Bazell. Thanks for listening. Make sure to join Jay each week for the Junior NBA Coaches Corner. Go to juniornba.com or wherever your favorite podcasts are found.